Okay, guys, we've been asked by one of our fellow podcasters, System Mastery.
Is this about ghosts?
No, not about ghosts.
If this is about ghosts, I'm leaving.
No, actually, they review old role-playing games, but they have another podcast called Afterthought, where they just talk about whatever.
What's a role-playing game?
A role-playing game is simulationist scenario where you play a character in a game, usually done at a tabletop.
Okay.
I did it a simulationist once.
Okay. So they use
depriving you of oxygen to heighten pleasure.
That does not sound like what that is.
That's what she was into, right?
I don't know if that's indicative of all.
Is that what those games are?
No.
Because it seemed like...
No, although it does not have to do with sexual role-playing, which I do realize is its own
yeah,
thing.
Okay.
Oh, we're not talking about sexual role-playing?
We're not talking about sexual role-playing. It would just be...
Why am I here? Why did everyone
Because they asked us to do a favor for them, and we're going to do a favor for them.
I understand the confusion.
But not a sexual favor.
No, it's a sensual. It's a sensual role-play.
Oh, okay.
Very different. Very different. I understand the confusion, though.
Gotcha. Okay. So we owe them a favor...
Like a
sensual favor
romance?
To be named later.
Something to do with romance.
I'm fine with
this.
It's
got nothing to do with romance. It's got nothing to do with any sort of amorous intentions. They want us to record a short introduction to the Afterthought podcast where they answer listener questions.
About ghosts? This sounds a lot like Ghost Adventures Aftershocks.
But I really... It is a lot like Aftershocks.
Then I'm leaving.
It's a way in. Why are you leaving? Because it's about ghosts.
He went on the ghost tour,
and you had a great time on that ghost tour.
Look, do ringists believe in ghosts?
No, that's why I'm leaving. Because ringists don't believe in ghosts.
But aren't you confident enough in your beliefs that you could hear us talk about ghosts and just say, "Man, these guys are crazy"?
I'm also confident enough in my beliefs that I could go take a nap in my bunk. I could do that as well.
But some nice people asked us to do a favor. They did.
I'm into a favor exchange, a sensual favor to be named later. I'm into that, and I don't want to know any more information.
What are they doing for us?
I don't need to know any more information. I don't want to know that. I want to be surprised.
Well, plug your ears.
Well, they've already mentioned our show on their show several times, and they
our ghost show?
not Ghost Force, but like the Dear Minoc section. You know that whole thing, that whole campaign of programs that we've linked together.
The campaign of programs. Yeah,
yes. So they've mentioned that, and they actually produced two short parody episodes of our show.
Copyright infringement.
Well, no, it's a parody.
No, I think what we do is technically copyright infringement.
What we do is an homage.
Yes, and a product demonstration.
Yes.
Definitely.
Because people need to know how to operate the Cat 5000 ship artificial intelligence.
I'd say it's just a rip-roaring good time.
Yeah, definitely rip-roaring.
And you can't fault anyone for having a little fun.
Also,
legally.
Did anyone else get a cold shoulder from rip-roaring it bike? Because I'll feel like...
What? Rip was there?
Rip Roarin was in a weird mood, but Good Time was... he was looking to party.
God, yeah. I love Rip Roarin and Dodgeball. He was so good in that... Hollow tape?
Tape?
Hollow...
Laserdisc.
Laserdisc. Hollow P3?
I think it's called a Blaster Disc.
Blaster Disc. He was so great.
Okay, so what are we doing?
So we're introducing, we're just letting people know that this is a segment where sometimes they talk about gaming, but mostly they just answer listener questions
about
and
ghosts.
Invent fake segments of the show that aren't actually real.
Is it about Gamergate?
No, they don't really talk about Gamergate.
More people should talk about Gamergate.
I don't think that's true.
Is this thing that we're recording now going on our podcast or their podcast?
It's going on their podcast. It's not going to be on our podcast. We're going to package this up, ship it out to them.
Package. Got it. It's literally the first time I've misunderstood a word that you've said.
No.
Hey, I'm telling you, that's the first time it's happened.
Guys, these are just nice people, and I feel like we can do them this nice favor.
Okay, hit record.
All right, we're recording now.
This is a recipe for...
Afterthought.
It's a recipe for afterthought.
Which
that's
is
the best.
A type of pudding.
Sure.
You know, I'll feel like I'll edit together what we already have, and we'll just call it a day.
Wait, so we're not...
We're not doing anything else?
We're not
else?
Doing an introduction?
I was recording all that stuff beforehand.
Oh, so when you just hit record, you hit stop.
Yes.
So we're not recording anymore.
So now we're definitely probably not recording.
That's literally... We got what we wanted to get. That was what we wanted.
Yeah, it's
this
done.
Feels like the opposite of a favor. What's the opposite of a favor? A punishment? This feels like a punishment for
Did
them.
Did we just do a punishment for a friend
a
of yours?
A sensual
Why
punishment?
Would we do that?
An erotic, sensual,
now,
thrilling punishment?
I definitely did not do an erotic, thrilling, sensual punishment.
No,
I would have known if I had done that. And if this is erotic and thrilling to them, that's a punishment unto itself.
Make erotic and thrilling decisions.
Podcast that is a companion to System Mastery, where every other week, John and I, Jeff, your host, and also John is your host, get together and talk about whatever the hell we want. All right, what are you laughing at? That couldn't have been clearer.
That was excellent. Well done, sir.
Crystal clear. The audience knew exactly what I meant. I'm the host. You're the host, and together we're hosts of Afterthought.
And together we're watching the host.
Oh, I actually do really like the host. I mean, it kind of falls apart in the third act.
Yeah, well, you know.
It mostly is really good for the couple early scenes of the monster flopping around and being all terrifying. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the way I feel about porn. When you see that monster flopping around being all terrifying.
I mean, that opening sequence, the first attack of the monster and the host, is so good for so many reasons. First of all, the monster is directly featured on camera right away.
Yeah, you don't have that that very ingrained notion that, like, can't show the monster. You got to wait until, like, Act 3 to actually show something head on.
Yeah, in fact, you don't see the monster that much after that shot. It's shot in broad daylight. Like, that opening sequence with the monster running around the park and killing people.
Yeah.
Broad daylight. There's a million people around. Everyone sees the monster. It is so well shot. So anyway, after that, though, it's a bunch of stuff about a dumb guy and an archery contest, and there's a lot of slapstick in there. I mean, people only really remember the scene where the monster runs around, and then later the scene where the monster barfs up bones. But after that, it's like, what's going on? I don't know. Slice of life Korea comedy, I think?
Yeah, it's real weird.
Well, that's a trend in Korean movies. It's similar to, like, watching Bollywood movies. They have a tendency to want to put, like, a little something for everybody in there. You know how, like, when you watch a kid's movie in America, like your shit CGI kids movies, they got to put in a little stupid, they got to have, like, go Smurf yourself in there, as if kids are going to figure out what the fuck that's supposed to mean. Huh. That's in Korea, they do that the other way. It's like, we got to put in something for grandma. We got to put in something for your friend who doesn't like monsters. We'll put that in there.
See, and that's why whenever anyone's like, man, the host is amazing. Like, this is one of the best horror movies. I'm like, it's okay.
It has one of the best horror scenes.
Yeah, it's got a good scene, but as far as a movie goes, I'm like, this is kind of weird. It doesn't really hang together that well.
That long take horror scene at the beginning is, for my money, one of the best monster horror scenes ever done. The part where it goes charging into that trailer full of people, the one dude who tries to fight it and is immediately killed for his trouble. Huh. Like, he's an American, there's an American dude in there, just suddenly gets killed. Like, he's like, we have to help, and then he just gets stomped. Man, that scene is amazing. The rest of the movie, meh.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, I don't know why we're talking about the host.
So, Batman. Much like the host.
Batman versus the monster from the host.
Much like the host, Batman, not that good.
Yeah, much like the host, it's best in that one sequence where Batman shows up in broad daylight and mows down a crowd.
Yeah. You remember that scene where someone's like, we need to stop the Batman, and then he stomps him?
Yeah, well, yeah, because I've seen Batman versus Superman.
Yep.
So I've seen him mow down a crowd in broad daylight.
I have definitely seen him throw a car into a building that still had people in it.
That goddamn movie. What the hell? Those, the only people in Gotham are the ones he kills.
Yeah, everything else is, that's abandoned. That is also abandoned.
Yeah.
That would be abandoned, but the Batman is in there killing everyone, so after that, it'll be abandoned.
It's so weird. They were like, he's down at the docks. It's after 7, so there's no one downtown right now in Gotham.
Oh, man. The best was when they said that about Metropolis, though. They're like, everyone went home from this downtown, like, business district.
Isn't Metropolis fake New York?
Yeah.
It doesn't empty out at night.
No, no one's like, well, guess it's time to call it an evening. Let's shut down the skyscraper.
Everyone out of Manhattan.
Yeah, no idea. Man, that was bad. It was real bad.
So dumb.
It was almost as bad. as Batman role-playing game.
Oh, you want to talk about the Batman role-playing game? Because I wanted to ask you if you think the Justice League movie is going to be any better, and digress longer and harder.
So long, so hard.
So ribbed.
So much for my pleasure.
Fine, let's talk about the Batman role-playing game.
Well, I don't really need to talk about the actual Batman role-playing game all that much.
What would you like to talk about?
I would like to talk about mostly the scaling and how it relates to superhero RPGs in general,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of people pointed out that one of the big flaws was the system that they used for this. They had used for the DC Heroes.
That game. Is correct, yeah. This is a spinoff from a larger DC Heroes game. And then eventually it became its own thing. The Mayfair company still had the license but lost the DC license. So they had the rules but not the Heroes. And so the next edition, or I think an edition or two after the one that we reviewed, it's like proprietary. They have like Neon Man and stuff like that in there.
Yeah. But the thing is, the system itself with the whole weird doubling for every point is supposed to be, oh, you can do street level heroes and you can do Superman.
Yeah.
Because that way, because it doubles every time, you don't have to go like crazy high into numbers, because it'll just double enough that by the time you hit like 39 or something, you're absolutely ludicrous.
Until you actually try to calculate Superman's strength in this, and it comes out to like 2,940 or something.
No, I actually think in the book they say it's like 200 and something.
Yeah, even
it's
that.
It's like Batman's a 5 and Superman's 274.
I think even if you did that, even if you followed through and doubling that over and over again, that'd still be in the ton weight where the Superman would come off as weak. Because it has to be enough for him to push moons around.
Oh, yeah.
His push weight is stupid, and it always
has
been.
Well, the problem is, once you get to the point where you're like, well, we've hit, like, 3 quintillion tons. If we go to 6 quintillion tons, though.
That's way too much for Superman.
Yeah. You're like, well, damn it.
I like the idea that he has an outer limit.
Oh, yeah. Obviously. Well, it's once he starts controlling the horizontal and the vertical, that's when you reach Superman's outer limit.
That's a reference.
Hey.
No.
No, but it's the sad thing is they didn't change the system for when it was just Batman.
Right, because you have a problem where street-level heroes kind of have an upper limit. Like, Batman shouldn't be able to get his strength to 6 because he can't lift a ton.
Yeah. It's because of the doubling, it means you hit a certain point where you go, this doesn't make sense anymore. Even the stuff that Batman has doesn't really make sense.
No.
Like, Batman is smart, yes, but he's not 10,000 times smarter than the average person.
I don't even know how you quantify that. What does it mean for someone to be, say, let's just say at a ballpark example, 4 times smarter than you?
Yeah. I'm like, well, you're very smart at that point. Good job.
You're very good at what? At figuring stuff out or at knowing stuff? It's one of those. But I don't like, what's Lex Luthor's intel? Oh, you know what? I guess we could just check the DC Heroes books.
Oh, we could. Even then, you go, okay, let's say I'm 10,000 times smarter than
the average
person.
Yeah.
And at that point, you go, okay, sure. But whenever you have Batman, like, solving some crime and he's the world's greatest detective, it should just mean that he, like, looks at it and goes, oh, it's this. Like, he doesn't even need to think about anything. He's like, oh, I already figured everything out forever. We're done here.
Yeah, he doesn't even need, like, he already knows all of the puzzles the Riddler will later come up with.
Like, he doesn't even need the Bat computer. The Bat computer is slower than he is.
It has to be at that point, yeah. I mean, do you think the Riddler is as smart as Batman?
I mean, given the rules, probably.
Yeah, because you can't double his intelligence again, or it just seems silly.
Yeah,
fair enough.
I mean, if you keep doubling the Riddler's intelligence, soon enough Jim Carrey's going to show up.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's going to have a sparkly jacket.
Get his gross head. Man, that movie, he is playing the Joker in that movie.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Which is why I didn't hate him in that movie. I didn't particularly like him as the Riddler, but I was like, I liked Jim Carrey in that movie. He got to Jim Carrey around.
I wonder if we'll ever get a good Riddler in a movie.
I mean, maybe at some point, but honestly, I don't know.
I don't think it's going to be during this film cycle. I think we're going to have to wait until Ben Affleck retires, because you've seen who's the new villain in the next Batman standalone, right?
No, I haven't seen anything.
Oh, it's the dude. It's Joe Manganiello. He was.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're getting Deathstroke.
We're getting Deathstroke, and it's the big, burly, lumberjacky werewolf from True Blood that gets to play him.
Yeah, he's the guy from Magic Mike.
Yeah, and the Pee Wee Herman movie that came out last year.
Man. That's quite the resume he's got there.
Yeah, he plays himself in the Pee Wee Herman movie. It's actually quite good.
Good.
I really enjoyed his performance in it. The rest of the movie was just too throwbacky, but his performance as Joe Manganiello, professional super rad dude, was fantastic. But, you know, that they put in Deathstroke so they can put in cool, stunty sword fights. And so I don't think they're at the level where they want the villain to be like a creepy serial killer who's compelled to leave clues.
Thing is, he shouldn't even be a serial killer. He'd just be like, I like to commit crimes, but I have a weird compulsion where I have to leave clues.
Yeah, Riddler's always going to be the toughest Batman villain to properly write. Because not only you have to come up with the clues, and yet no one really is sure of what the... I mean, what does he do? What's he want? He wants to trick Batman?
No, because that's one of those things. Like, we brought up the whole, like, someone brought the cat's eye diamond into Gotham. But you never really know what the Riddler's going to go after, because you're like, oh, we have a clown thing. Joker's going to go after it. We have something that's, like, two halves. Two-Face is going to go after it. The Riddler's just like, fuck it, I'm going after whatever I want.
That dude who knows how to get you free money from the government is in town. I need to steal his suit.
That's where my power comes from.
Oh, an important... I think he probably wants, like, important books or something. Like,
no, man. Most of the time, he's either doing, like, revenge stuff or he's just robbing things.
Didn't they turn him good for a long time recently?
Oh, yeah. He became, like,
he's like
the
House.
New Question.
Yeah, he's, like, Question or a Sherlock sort of thing.
Yeah, he became a detective for hire.
Yeah. And I think they also reverted him back to
evil. Unlike
detectives
that aren't for hire and are destitute.
You mean like Detective Chimp? I hear he only works for the finest of bananas.
The very finest.
But anyway, yeah, he is the Riddler is straight up the Joker in Batman Forever. I mean, he's just running around giggling and throwing like gas bombs and goofing
terrible jokes.
Goofing off. It's like they were just regretting that they had killed off the Joker in the first Batman movie.
Yes, that is true.
And why they were pretending that that was a continuation of the same storyline as Tim Burton's Batman 89 is a mystery to me.
Because like, they had to. They're look, that's how we're going to get people to come see this.
Why bother? I mean, I guess maybe at this point we've hit the point now where not every a superhero movie has to be a sequel and everyone's fine with reboots and continuity shifts.
Yeah. At that point, given that there wasn't the ridiculous glut of superhero stuff, and Batman had been, like, the only one that actually did anything.
It was the only game in town, that's true.
They were like, well, we've got to stick with it, because if we try and change it up, maybe we'll lose the audience.
The one thing we're okay with is ensuring that Billy Dee Williams doesn't have to come back to play Two-Face.
Boy, howdy. Man, that would have been so good.
That would have been neat.
That or if they had given Two-Face anything to do.
I know, it's real sad what he's doing in that movie. Tommy Lee Jones is one of my favorite actors, and if it had just been Batman versus Two-Face in that movie, then that would have been okay. I also didn't hate the Riddler's performance in that movie.
No, and the thing is, Two-Face is one of the easiest people to write for in Batman.
Yeah. You're
like, man, you go ahead, you establish some dent, you get
the connection
whole duality
with Bruce.
Thing,
yeah.
You're fine.
And they didn't even bother with the whole connection with Bruce element. There was none of that. He was just instead he had a connection with Robin.
Yeah, I, it's so weird. I don't understand what they were doing in that movie.
Making a big gay party explosion. It's Joel Schumacher. That's all.
Oh man, when is he going to release Big Gay Party Explosion? Because I would go pay money to see that.
Would you? What if it was called Batman Big Gay Party Explosion?
This ain't Batman Big Gay Party.
No,
Explosion.
I don't want it to be porn. I just want more Joel Schumacher.
No, I mean
neon
just like
Rainbow
there's no there's no Batman. They just want to let you know that this ain't Batman.
Oh, okay.
It's a Big Gay Party.
It's got Owlman instead. It'll change anything. It's just Owlman instead of Batman, and he has to fight the Big Gay Party Explosion.
Yeah. Owlman versus the Big Gay Party Explosion. Hollywood, where you at?
I'll sell you this script for $700,000. It's all set. Just call me.
Just do it. I've already got this. I've got storyboards.
Look, you know how the world is clamoring for more Owlman stories, right?
You realize this, correct?
Yeah, yeah. People really want stories about alternate Earth 2 Batman who's slightly eviler.
Slightly eviler.
Just slightly eviler. And how he has to fight a big gay party explosion and Joel Schumacher has to direct it unless he's dead, in which case I guess we could let Bryan Singer do it. No, I mean, that's mean. Bryan Singer is gay, but he doesn't have any gay sensibilities
to
him.
No, you'd get Baz Luhrmann to do that.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want Baz Luhrmann. You're right. That's exactly what I want.
Right?
I also want Hugh Jackman in there.
I want a huge Jackman.
Hugh Jackman as the big gay party explosion.
I mean, there is a big gay party explosion, but he is the big gay party explosion as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Metaphorically and also literally.
Yeah, yeah, he's in there. We got Neil Patrick Harris in there as Music Meister.
No Batman, but Music Meister's in there.
Well, of course, I mean, we've already established there's no Batman. It's an Owlman story.
This is an Owlman
now,
joint.
I think Hollywood is ready for a guy who dresses exactly like Batman but constantly insists that he is not. which is why it's time for Owlman and the Big Gay Party Explosion, coming soon to theaters near you.
Yes.
Good Lord, why?
What the hell are we talking about?
Batman Through the Ages. You know why I'm so eager to talk about Batman Through the Ages? Is because after the jokes in the last episode, I actually sat down and started writing Everyone is Batman.
Good.
I downloaded Everyone is John again, and I flipped through it and read all the stuff and started making the conversions to Batman, and I encountered a couple of issues that I did not expect to encounter. I mean, first of all, the whole thing with Everyone is John is that the storyline revolves around nothing. You wake up in the morning, and then you do whatever you want with John.
Yeah.
So with Everyone is Batman, you can't just wake up in the Batcave and doodle around in there. You need to be off on some mission. So the first thing that happens is the player has to establish a mission. So I put together a little random system similar to the back half of Lasers and Feelings, where you roll to like, okay, the evil diamond is being stolen by the Mikado.
God damn it, Mikado.
Get out of here, you.
I'm the Mikado. I don't have any powers.
And so you go off and you fight the battle, and every time Batman gets socked by a thug, it's a chance for someone else to take control and switch what kind of Batman he is.
Sweet.
But the real question came up right away when I was like, well, wait, there are certain Batmans that have a Robin. And other Batmans do not have a Robin.
That is true.
So I've established in my version of Everyone is Batman, there's a Robin, and sometimes Batman acknowledges him, and sometimes he doesn't, and sometimes he calls him shit like Carrie Kelly. And Robin is just perpetually confused and worried for Batman, who seems to be not doing very well.
Indeed.
Yeah, so anyway, that's a preview of the upcoming Everyone is Batman variant role-playing game that I'm throwing together for a laugh.
Good.
You want to answer some questions from listeners, or would you like to keep rambling about nothing for another 20?
We could.
I guess.
It's possible.
All right, well, why don't we get that started? You want to take the first question this week?
Okay, fine. So, this one from fan of the show, Ted Cheddar.
Big fan of the show.
What series should be adapted with the rules framework of Lasers and Feelings? Personally, I can't decide whether Fast and Furious or Bold and the Beautiful would be better.
Oh, well, that's easy. It's Brave and the Bold. So it's Batman, Brave and the Bold. Definitely the right one to adapt to Lasers and Feelings. You have
obviously
to roll. Yeah, you're either brave or you're bold.
Yeah, either brave or bold.
Yeah, sometimes you achieve brave bold.
Oh, my brave bold.
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm going to go with Good and Plenty.
The candy?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a Good and Plenty themed
RPG. So sometimes
RPG.
You're good and sometimes you're plenty.
Sometimes I am plenty. Roll for plenty.
And sometimes you are good and plenty, and in those situations, oh, God, I hate good and plenty so much, too.
And in those situations, people are like, ugh, God.
Those things are gross. They're like, first of all, when you try and bite them in half, the resulting leftover is bird poop. That's what those are. They're white around a black core. They look like bird poop.
Yeah.
And second, they taste like black licorice. Nastiest.
That's because they are black licorice.
Nastiest of all the candies.
Nah.
Yeah, nastiest of candies.
No, that's not true. Any of that, like, tamarind flavored candy that's got like just a bunch of chili sauce on it, man, fuck that.
Yeah, but that's because you've got the taste palate of someone from like Nebraska.
That is very true.
Yeah, you can't eat spicy things.
It is very true. This is a thing that is known.
You probably, I mean, you're so basically Minnesotan that I'm sure you would happily eat a Good and Plenty hot dish.
Yeah, man, you get some tater tots, you get some green beans, you put some Good and Plenty in there, you're good to go, baby.
Cheese it up real good, that cheese sour cream mixture.
You gotta have that cheese layer. That's that's how you know it's crisping up real nice.
All right. So Lasers and Feelings and Brave and the Bold are definitely very serious answers.
Dude, you said Lasers and Feelings again, man.
I did. I
quit
did.
Being all tired.
I'm so sorry. I am very tired.
Quit it. Quit being tired.
I am. I'm sorry. It was Brave and the Bold and Good and Plenty.
Yeah, there we go. He also asked, in celebration of Apocalypse World 2nd Edition's release, I had some afterthought questions. You've goofed about having a Gygax in Heartbreaker RPGs before. What would a McCracken be?
A McCracken. Well, obviously it's a Kraken that's franchised.
I was going to say it was a Scottish Kraken.
Ah, I'm a big beastie. I've come to wreck your ship. Don't want to pay for it though, because I'm cheap. What else can I think about Scottish people? I invented golf.
I'm gonna take your ship and deep fry it. That Scottish.
Oh, it's old Kraken. I hate him.
Oh, Kraken.
So it's a giant Scottish squid.
There you go. What is the best not orc, i.e. hobgoblin, bugbear, skeleton, whatever?
Quaggoth. It's definitely Quaggoth, which is a shaggy half bugbear, half orc.
Okay.
Or Gorollon, which I believe is an evil three-eyed super gorilla.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say that the correct answer is kobold. Kobold is the correct answer.
Man, kobold isn't a not orc. Orc is a not kobold.
Well, he also included skeletons and not orcs, so I assume it's just his plentiful thing to fight.
Oh, he's okay. In that case, I'm going to go with Skelebot.
That is a good one.
Yeah. You really want to spend a lot of time beating up Skelebots. And
you do, because, I mean, obviously you're an 80s cartoon.
And I've been true. And I have recently been writing a Feng Shui 2 adventure for us to run through later this month, and it's Cthulhu's, because those are just generic thugs in the one I'm writing.
Yeah.
You guys are fighting like 12 Cthulhu's.
Sweet.
There's Cthulhu's everywhere.
It's all these Cthulhu's.
There's so
too
many.
Too many Cthulhu's.
The brochure said there'd only be a few Cthulhu's.
This is way too many Cthulhu's.
Too many Cthulhu's is...
That's the name of the adventure.
Too many Cthulhu's.
Too many Cthulhu's.
Too many Cthulhu's. Too many Cthulhu's.
Yeah. Okay, underwater adventures... Good or bad idea, how would you do it?
All right, so the first thing you need to know when you're setting up a good underwater adventure in a role-playing game session is, absolutely, you can totally do it, but the first thing you're going to need is to set the scene. Electrified seaweed everywhere. You could need a lot of electrified seaweed, making everything into a precision skill test at every turn.
Now, I'm on board with this. What you're going to want to do is amp that tension and give them a goal. Give them something they need to do. Maybe there's some bombs to defuse, perhaps.
Yeah, you got
to
get underwater and defuse those bombs. That makes perfect sense. But bombs don't, you know, not only do they not defuse themselves, but they don't have all day for you to defuse them. So you're going to need to give a tight-ass time limit for how long you have to defuse those bombs. And, of course, never forget the electrified seaweed.
Obviously.
So between those two things, I think you got the bombs, you got a time limit, you got the electrified seaweed. That's three things. That's enough things to really ramp up the tension and make an awesome, tense underwater combat sequence.
Now, also, your players are going to want to be Ninja Turtles.
not jokes.
So, for me, underwater adventure is one of two ways that I look at it. Either you're going to do something where you completely get rid of the fact that you're hampered by being underwater. So you're like, oh, I ate this thing, and it makes it so I breathe and move underwater real good. Or you're specifically doing, like, one of those like submarine combat things where you're like, I'm super claustrophobic, and if anything goes wrong, we're all gonna die.
When you're not really fighting underwater, you're fighting in air. But oh my god, the pressure, you guys! If anything breaches the hull,
oh yeah, it's essentially the way that you'd look at the underwater adventure is either we're doing like an Aquaman adventure or we're doing the Hunt for Red October.
I want to do an aerial dogfight underwater. That's my go-to.
Want to be in the air underwater.
No, I just want to ride around on a cool fish. Like everyone gets their own kind of cool fish, and then you ride around on them and have like dogfight combat underwater.
Yeah.
What would you ride? What's your cool fish of choice? If you get to ride a giant version of a regular fish into combat underwater, what do you go with? And I'm going to open up to mammals and crustaceans and such as well.
Oh, you get to open it up to mammals? I'm going to say a chimpanzee.
One of them sea chimps.
The sea chimps. Chimps of the sea.
The sea monkeys, if you will, but don't call them that because they're sea apes.
Exactly. They hate when you say that.
So a chimpanzee. No. That's your underwater fish of choice.
Let's see. What would I ride if I could spend a day underwater?
Well, I'd like to visit the sea.
I'd probably swim along with the snorks.
So a snork. So when we're having
a giant snork.
So we're having a ship or a dogfight combat underwater, and your mount of choice is a giant snork.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's intelligent.
Is it a regular snork, or is it the one whose snork has replaced his nose, because he's the freak snork?
No, I'm getting the snork that's got the star shirt.
Oh, the star shirt? That's a pretty good choice. I think I'd probably go with the one snork that has two snorks.
Yeah, the pigtail snorks?
Yeah, the one that's got, like, extra snorks coming out of the top of her head. That's... What is going on? Do they not notice? Like, that'd be like meeting someone with two noses.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, man, I don't find that weird at all. Your two noses are not disconcerting to me. In fact, I think you're the tomboy of the group and not the freaky two-nose snork.
Yeah, it's just something that happens in their society.
I guess it must be.
And finally, what is your favorite movie that's not in English?
It's probably The Host.
God damn it.
What's the matter? No, it's my answer would probably be Delicatessen.
Ooh, I haven't seen that one.
It is really, really good.
Is it?
It's.
I've heard things.
It is hilarious. There's some amazing sequences in the movie. It's a setup movie. I mean, granted, you know, it's got a creepy, gross backstory to it, and it uses a regular cast of actors that the director had used several times before. But there's all these cool setups for physical comedy in the movie. There's a whole sequence where while the landlord butcher guy is like sawing through a body, everyone in the building is doing something repetitive that matches the sawing. Huh. And it keeps expanding further and further outward to show you what each person is doing that matches the sawing. And eventually you're looking at like a cross section of the house with everything going at once. There's one guy who keeps trying to kill himself in comical ways and keeps failing and being miserable. It is legitimately quite good to watch, a good film, and definitely worth watching.
Sweet.
So there you go. There's my recommendation for a non-English movie, Delicatessen.
Nice.
What do you got?
God, I don't know.
Godzilla.
Yeah, Godzilla. Actually, no. The original Godzilla, I'm not a huge fan of. I'll be honest.
It sets up the concept of Godzilla better, but boy, is it ever. I've heard the same complaint about the new Japanese Godzilla movie that just came out as I have heard about the original, or as I have experienced in the original Godzilla, which is, here's a monster. All right, great. Did you guys get your monster fixed? Because here's 40 minutes of guys talking in military bases.
Yeah, well, that's why when everyone was like, man, that American, the new Godzilla, they barely show Godzilla at all. I'm like, well, that's part of the fine tradition of Godzilla movie.
Yeah, you don't want to put that Godzilla on screen if you can avoid it. Certainly wouldn't want him to mow down a bunch of people in the middle of the day.
No, certainly what you want to have is probably a bunch of guys in military outfits in some base
hats,
yammering at each other.
Yeah.
And probably a little kid.
And they're all like real blamey of each other. They're all like, yes, this is because of our hubris that this Godzilla is here and he is killing everyone.
Ah, yes. We should have thought ahead.
Yeah. Notice that we did not do Japanese accents, but instead just gravelly voices.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So non-English movies that I really like. I'm going to say, fucking, you know what was really good? And I haven't seen in forever, but I really liked it when I saw it.
This Ain't the Brothers Karamazov?
Yeah, that porn parody. Amelie.
This ain't War and Peace.
But it is
15 hours long.
I saw Amelie when was in theaters.
All right.
And I never saw it again, but I remember really liking it when I saw it.
That's weird that we both went with French movies.
Yeah, well, the French.
Yeah.
Fucking French. Actually, what was also really good is Record, which is a Spanish zombie movie, which is really good.
I've heard of that. That is cool. I was thinking of a Spanish language movie, but the only one that could pop up into my head was Pan's Labyrinth, which I hated.
Really?
It was visually quite interesting, completely joyless, and that kind of cut for me. There was no levity, there was no tension release at all in the movie. It was just Lemony Snicket's series of gross events. It's just, so what happens next? Oh, someone hits the girl. What happens next? Oh, something scares her, and she goes into a place, and then something hits her in there, and she's sad, and then she gets hit again, and oh, when you know it, there's a monster, it's attacking her, and she's sad, and There's just no breathing in the movie, which, you know, I understand that that's definitely a thing you could go for, but I was kind of hoping for it needed ebb and flow. It needed balance a little bit.
All right.
Which is, you know, I know that's a weird complaint, and Guillermo del Toro is an amazing director, and I love what he does, which is acquire properties that he never intends to make and then just sits on them like a big, fat, bearded hen.
Man, I cannot wait for At the Mountains of Madness to hatch.
Yeah, I think I think he's just waiting until Tom Cruise is too old to guarantee himself the lead role. I think that's what's happening. He's like, oh, shit, somehow Tom Cruise got attached to this. I don't want his weirdo energy in the movie. The main character is supposed to be scared all the time, not just running and riding a motorcycle.
Man, I can't wait for the main character to ride a motorcycle across Antarctica and then, like, jam it into a Shoggoth.
There's giant penguins here, and he's using one like a motorcycle. At least get Tom Hanks as your star so he could pee on things.
At least.
Yeah. All right, so there you go.
There you go. Those were all of Ted Cheddar's questions. Thank you, Ted Chedaro.
All right, next question comes to us from AmiYumi, and it says, hey, cheese dudes, AmiYumi here with a few more dishwasher-safe questions you can make using ingredients found in your own home. Oh, man, you can make them with baking soda and weed? I'm kidding. I don't have any baking soda. How do you
Who
feel?
Who has that anymore?
I do. I don't have weed. I have baking soda. I have a lot of baking goods. I cook a lot.
weirdo.
I know. How do you feel about the use of drugs or alcohol while gaming?
Hey, what do you know?
I didn't know that was coming. I am personally against drinking and role-playing, having had to call one too many sessions early after a player gets a little too drunk and can't play anymore. Yet I've had some great times playing cards after sharing a bowl, and once effectively LARPed a game of Paranoia where the happiness officer was actually handing out happy pills both in and out of character. What is your opinion? Oh, man, you're going all pills on... Man, get in contact with me, AmiYumi. I don't have a source in San Diego anymore.
So, I mean, getting drunk for role-playing, I would agree that it's not the best, because what's going to happen is you're thinking, oh, man, I'm going to get drunk, and then this is going to be great. I'm going to be all loose, and I'll be able to get into character better. But what's going to happen is you're going to get louder and
annoying. Yeah, yeah, it's a rise and fall. Now, there are certain situations where drinking and gaming go together very well. You know, a nice game of Drunk Quest in a big hallway full of other, or hall full of other drunk people.
If you're playing specifically games you can do while drunk,
yeah,
then yes.
Yeah.
That's fine. You but know, if it's like, oh, we're trying to role play something that we always come back to, and you're like, oh, yeah, normally we're sober, but this time we're drunk, you're like, well, you're just going to fuck up your game and have to go, nope, that didn't happen.
Yeah, and I actually, you know, I'm trying real hard to think of a time I have, but I have never played an RPG while on anything other than booze.
Yeah.
And so I don't actually have all that strong of an opinion on it. I could see situations where it'd be a good thing and situations where it'd be a bad thing. Like, for example, weed tends to make people talk about weed. Which is not what really my ideal situation for most games.
Well, I mean, it tends to make people just talk out their ass, which means, I guess if you were playing Numenon High, that would be a thing.
Yeah. And the only other, I'm sure I'm allowed to say this on a nationally available podcast, but the only other drug I've ever tried is mushrooms, and I would not have played a role-playing game.
No, that would be impossible to keep your attention on.
Yeah, I would have been like, I'm not doing this, I'm going to go read that Dr. Bronner soap bottle again. So yeah, I don't know of any drug in particular that I would want to be on. I don't know. Maybe there's some drug out there that I'm just not thinking of that would be great. Maybe weed would work if you were really in moderation about it.
Or if you're one of those people that's like, I've smoked my entire life and now it doesn't even matter anymore. Like, yeah. I get high and it's just sort of like, oh, eh.
Yeah, I don't smoke weed enough for that to happen. I think last time I smoked weed, the only thing I remember is that I got high enough that it took me like 10 minutes to walk across my living room. Like, I was like, I need to go to the bathroom. And I was just doing...
Oh, man.
I was just doing, like, shaky leg. I was like, all right, gotta go to the bathroom. And I'd lift one
do
leg.
Do shaky leg.
Shaky leg, shaky
do
leg.
Do the shaky leg. Leg.
And then put it down and, like, all right, here we go. Next
and then,
leg.
And then I'd whip, and then I would nay-nay.
I'd whip my hair back and forth. I'd whip my hair back and forth. John, I'd whip my hair back and forth. So, I guess not that strong of an opinion. I, for all of our jokes about 420 Blaze it all the time and what have you, neither of us are all that regular of drug users.
Yeah, no.
It's probably because we are constantly shiftless and between jobs, and so we can't. All right, let's see here. Although we as gamers sometimes act like the hobby is all theater of the mind, various props and feelies have been there since the beginning. From minis and art books to the often suggested in GMG's use of theme music, I always love when they do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All the way to the prop decks of many things and Game Master's masks. God, I want to see that. That's awesome. What do you consider to be the right amount of props, and how far is too far?
Too far is when you show up and there's only candles for light. Your DM is in a cloak and a hat and a mask, and he welcomes you to the new world that you will inhabit.
Yeah, I think too far is basically the story that takes place in mazes and monsters.
Yeah, once you get to the point where you're like, all right, I'm going to have to like go to the creepy old place, and I'm going to set up props here, and I've got like a sound system.
I mean, there's nothing wrong. That sounds awesome.
No, it sounds amazing, but honestly, you have gone way too far for a game.
I don't even
at that
really,
point, you should be charging admission.
The part where they play the game in the cave, I would totally do that. What I thought was too far in Mazes and Monsters was the part where every game they play, remember, these guys are all level 9,
ooh,
that they start their session off with the DM, the boring blonde guy, I believe, in that particular session, of him being like, I am the game master. I am in charge of whether you live or die. All decisions must pass through me by way of the roll of a single die, and I am your god. And he's like, "What? Shut the fuck up, Jerry.
Yeah.
What are you doing? This is too much, Jerry. Also, turn off the evanescence."
Yeah, wake up. Wake me up inside.
Guys, doesn't this music make you feel super badass? Man, you got to be so ready to fucking fight the evil corporations in the Shadowrun game, right, guys?
You right.
Come on, let's listen to some more Evanescence, the other song that you know.
Dude, I'll say this. I owned that first Evanescence album.
Yeah.
It's the shit. I don't care.
It's good?
Fuck everyone.
No, I don't mind if it's good. I just don't want to have to listen to it during a game session. I believe my experience with game music in a game is that I had a person who tried to pump everyone up for a D&D session once by putting fucking, I don't remember the name of the album. I think it's Anima. Is that the name of the album too?
Tool?
Tool, yeah. I don't remember what the actual album's called, but it was the fucking one with Anima, which I don't know why anyone would ever call that song Anima when it should just be called Learn to Swim, Learn to Swim, Learn to Swim, Learn to Swim, Learn to Swim. That's a good name for that song. Tool. Fucking math rock. Ugh.
So, no, see, the correct stuff is any instrumental things. So whenever we were doing something and it was supposed to be horror, we'd have like the Alien soundtrack. If we were doing some fantasy stuff, you can throw on Lord of the Rings, you know, any of that, just some movie soundtrack stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing I like better than doing some D&D to like the Grease soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. That is perfect.
How much? Actually, would that be rad? Tell me whether or not that would be rad. Would you like to play D&D? All the monsters are still there. All the races and classes are still there. Whole thing set in high school.
No, but what I would like to play is Sandra D&D.
Look at me, I'm Sandra D&D. Lousy with encounter tables. Whoops, I can't come up with a rhyme off the top of my head.
Damn.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, so my general opinion is I'm not a huge fan of... Well, oh wait, that wasn't the question. It wasn't what do you think of music in games, which
it's,
I am
it's how much
medium.
Props is too much props. And I say, give me a map, give me some minis, that's fine.
Yeah,
but
don't
try and like make it a full scene. You don't need to be like, all right, now because your adventure's in the woods, we must go to the woods. Or even worse, instead of doing that, because we're lazy nerds, I put a fern around the map. And you're like, okay, great.
Now drink your Dr. Pepper from this skull goblet.
That's what I was planning on doing anyway, so yeah, sure. All right.
Actually, before we move on there, what is your opinion of the DM screen?
I kind of am fine with the DM screen. It lets you fudge easier.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing you want to do.
Yeah.
Is fudge in the player's favor to keep the story rolling along.
Yeah, you don't want to be like, and I just murdered a guy, so you're like, yeah, he missed you.
Yeah, he did less than your total HP and damage. That's
well,
the
how
ticket.
Much health are you at? He did that only slightly lower.
Yeah. All
okay.
Right.
Next is from Nimini.
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 What is the correct joke sequel name? Is it Original Title 2, Electric Boogaloo? Original Title 2, Original Title Harder? Original Title 2, Back in the Habit? Or Original Title 2, Two Original Two Title?
I'm going to go with the one where you switch the number 2 out for the word 2, like T-O-O. Like for like, look who's talking to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I think that's always my favorite, is when you can make that work.
Yeah, but that's usually only in written medium. Like, if I'm talking to someone and I'm telling them that and I want to make a stupid joke name of a sequel...
Fair enough.
I'm almost always going to go with Boogaloo and occasionally the Too Fast, Too Furious one.
Too Fast, Too Furious requires the movie to have a two-world title.
Yes.
Like, you could say Too Jurassic, Too World and get away with it.
But you shouldn't.
You shouldn't, and you shouldn't... God, they're making that movie right now.
They are.
Yeah, and I've
and
already
it promises
seen
to be more scary.
I know, and the director was like, look, the reason we use so much CGI is because that Indominus Rex thing that we made is real hard to make a model of. And I'm like, good, don't. Just don't. Don't
then
bother
don't
with
do that.
Don't put that stupid thing in there because it's not Jurassic Parky. It's a giant murderer in a dinosaur costume. It was a terrible idea. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
I'm a lot salty. I'm a lot salty.
You are very salty.
I looked back at the burning of... I'm Lot's wife when it comes to Jurassic World.
That is true.
Yeah.
I, however, am Lot. I did not look back.
And then you later went on and probably scored with your own daughters.
Yeah, I got drunk and they boned me or something.
Man. All right.
Good job, Lot.
So, yeah, I'd probably also go with Electric Boogaloo. Out of that set of options, I also will often go with The New Batch. That's a regular one. Jurassic World 2, The New Batch. It just floats pretty well. It's all right.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, Bridget Jones's Diary, The New Batch. it's okay sometimes.
Yeah,
so,
man.
It's all right.
Well, it lets you remember that Gremlins 2 exists.
Yeah.
And anything that lets you do that is great.
I know. Gremlins 2 is great.
It's a great movie for great people.
It's a great movie for smart people. Is that everything from that question
yep.
answer?
There we go.
All right,
that's
let me move on. From Flame Titan says, a common theme of your podcast is that bad RPGs often use long, complicated charts. Is there such a thing as a good table or chart? And, you know, I actually thought about this because I saw this question a few days ago, and I decided I would make a joke answer by making a chart of whether or not there's a good chart. And I couldn't do it because Excel wouldn't let me do a 3D scatter plot,
aww.
Which is what I wanted. I had three axes of whether or not a chart is valuable, and they were how often do you have to roll on the chart? Is the process of rolling on the chart any fun? And, what was the third one? I don't even remember now. But anyway, the end result was like, all right, Thaco, for example. Oh, it was how easy is it to memorize the chart?
Ah.
How simple is it? How often do you need to refer to the chart to use it was the third one. So something like Thaco, for example. How often do you need Thaco when you're playing 2nd edition D&D?
All the time.
All the goddamn time. It's a mandatory chart. That's not especially in its favor. However, is the Thaco chart any fun?
No.
It can be. The process of hitting monsters can be considered to be fun. I was going to give it a medium.
Okay.
And then finally, how hard is it to memorize Thaco?
Not very.
It's not hard at all. It's actually quite easy. But then you have another example chart, like the two-hit chart and two-damage chart conversion in the Batman RPG. How often do you need this chart?
All the goddamn time.
Is it any fun to roll on this chart?
No.
And could you ever memorize this chart?
No.
So that's a bad chart.
Yeah.
Well, so for example, the AD&D first edition. Actually, let's go with this one. The random events in the world chart from Maid. How often do you need to roll on this chart?
Not all that often.
No, it's whenever someone spends story points, they can roll on it if they want to. Is it fun to roll this chart?
Immensely.
It is insanely fun to roll a crazy chart in Maid. And could you ever memorize the chart in Maid?
No.
No, but you don't need to because you don't roll it very often, but it's immensely fun when you do. It falls into the same category as things like the magic item charts and DMGs.
See, I look at the charts and tables as if you're talking about something like Batman or Marvel Heroes or anything like that.
And I am always talking about either Batman or Marvel Heroes.
All the time.
Yeah.
Then I'm not a fan of resolution systems requiring a chart.
Namorita.
I don't want there to be a point where I'm playing a game, and in order to play this game, I have to continually look at a chart.
Kitty pride.
However, if I'm playing a game and, say, during setup of character creation or specific events that show up, you want me to roll on a chart or table, that can be fine.
Yeah.
I would, when I'm making a guy and I'm in Palladium, which has a bajillion charts, if I want to go, you know what, I don't even care what this person looks like or what his background is, I can just roll on all of these charts, great, but none of them are mandatory, whereas the mandatory charts where it's like, this system has a resolution that uses charts, that's where you get to the point where you're like, nope, no good, don't do it.
I think some of those charts Thaco, for example, is a chart that you need to do system resolution, but you can memorize it.
Well, it's not even a chart, it's just... What is Thaco? It's the same thing as the AC. It just goes down instead of up.
Yeah, but it goes down at a measurable pace, and that's what it is. Like, for example, you can pretty easily clarify what a third level cleric's Thaco is.
I couldn't.
18. It's 18. It goes down by 2 every 3.
Great.
Yeah. But that's all. Once you get that in, you're like, all right, I got the Thaco chart memorized. Thieves go down 1 and 2. Wizards go down 1 and 3. Fighters go down 1 and 1. Clerics go down 3 or 2 and 3.
But the thing is, you don't need that. You never have to look at the chart during the game.
That's a good chart.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Is you don't have to. That's not a chart that is part of your resolution system. Thaco is, but the Thaco chart isn't, because all you need is a number from it, and you don't ever need to look at the chart until your character is done. In the same way that I don't need to look at like every single feat that exists every time I try to do anything. It's just the ones that I have.
Fair enough. Sure. So, certain charts can be fun. Generally, it boils down to a rarity thing. Do you need this chart all the goddamn time? Like, could you play the Batman RPG without someone keeping the book open to the resolution chart or printing it out and having it on the table. And it's not like Batman's the only game that's like that. I mean, I've even posted to Twitter the picture of the Marvel Superheroes role-playing chart, which is a goddamn periodic table.
Yes, it is probably the most egregious example of this.
That's not true. We just haven't reviewed Phoenix Command yet.
Nor will we.
No, we probably will. Patreon goal, $750.
$1 million.
We'll review Phoenix Command, a game you don't need us to review. So there you go. What's next?
All right, so how much money would your Patreon have to pull in to enable the two of you to quit your jobs and do this full time? A lot.
Basically, we even have that. We briefly dallied with the idea of that being the goal of a $3,000 micro pig level on the Patreon. Is, hey, we make roughly $1,500 a month each. We could quit and you know not make that much money, but enough to like.
Well, no, at the $3,000, we'd be making $3,000 each.
Oh, that's right, about $3,000 each, which is more than I make now. It's still the big problem with that is when you quit, all of a sudden we're American, so that means we'd have to figure out our own health insurance market.
Oh, yeah. Well, at that point, we become a company, and we have to start figuring out, like, all right, well, what's our new tax code?
I already pay taxes on the Patreon earnings. So we already have to file for this. You just haven't seen that happen, but I have to file the Patreon shit. So that's already a thing that happens. But, yeah, health insurance just would eat us alive. So it would be a lot of goddamn fucking money, especially since, you know, some of us may have kids someday.
Yeah, not me, though.
Yeah.
So, one, congratulations, you have magically hit slightly above half the figure you quoted in question one, and now have enough money for only one of you to quit your day job. What contest of skill do you compete in to determine who is now a professional RPG reviewer?
It's going to be John, because
yeah,
I have a real job.
Our contest of skill is who makes less money, and it is me.
Yeah, so it'd be John. John has a terrible real job. I have a really good real job.
Yep.
And so it'd be him who gets to quit, which is weird, because I'm the one who does all the podcast crap. I mean, I've learned him on how to do it.
Oh, no, I'll do it. It's just we're at your place because my place is weird.
Well, you know what? I'm being unfair. For a long time, I did a lot of all the posting and editing and so on duties, and you have taken on a very great deal of that responsibility in the past year or so, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate you as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you were enabled by us having a ton of money to quit your crap job, and just work on the podcast all the time, I'd just dump it all on you anyway.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. And that would be what I would do with all of my free time.
Yes. So fair enough. And anyway, I would say it's you.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So what video game's plotline, ignoring the game's mechanics, do you think would be best adapted into an ongoing campaign?
Like a campaign that has already started?
Well, a campaign that isn't a one-shot.
Ah, okay.
So like an ongoing game. For a video game plot line.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Castlevania, the first one.
Castlevania, the first one, yes. I'm actually going to go with either Castlevania Symphony of the Night or Super Metroid. Those would be my answers for a game that would make... The only problem with both of them is that they are very one-player-y.
Yeah, because the problem I'm having is anytime I think about a video game, either it's going to be a single player thing, so the actual plot line wouldn't work for a like RPG group,
mm-hmm.
or it's just an RPG, and so I would just be stealing some RPG to play an RPG in, and that's terrible.
That's why I went with Castlevania, because it's got RPG elements. You can upgrade your character and so on. And also, you know what? I'm going to really stick to the Castlevania thing, because Castlevania has a rich mythos of different types of characters you can play. Hell, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, before it came out on the PlayStation 2, had more playable characters. You could play as like a witch who used a crystal ball on animals to attack in addition to Alucard. She was neat. So the whole thing where you can make different types of characters in a Castlevania game really lends itself to castle exploration and fighting vampires and zombies and what have you. I think that'd actually be super rad. A Castlevania RPG is something I've never mentioned before. Also, it'd be the first time I'd want music playing during my game, because Castlevania music fucking rules.
Huh. All right.
So I'm saying Castlevania, and I think John's going to say Katamari Damacy.
Yeah, that's the best for an RPG.
Justify it. Let's see you do it. Improv it out, John.
Oh, well, yes, and the reason I would say that is because you could be competing Katamaris, and that way, you're just trying to roll up things and get the pleasure of the space king who is your DM.
Yeah, the DM plays the king of the cosmos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so everyone would be sort of competing, but then you'd get to a point where everyone's balls were too big to handle by themselves, and then you'd have to help each other hold your balls.
Yeah, my balls are always bouncing to the left and to the right, so that's the sort of thing where I feel like my big balls should be held every night.
Indeed.
And so I'd want to play that game constantly.
Exactly.
Dirty big balls.
Indeed.
Yes, and...
So, what system would you run it in? How adaptable would this narrative be when your players inevitably derail the plot train? Meh.
My new favorite is Feng Shui 2. I would run Castlevania and Feng Shui 2 in a heartbeat. You've already got sorcerers, you've already got martial arts type dudes and gun dudes, and you can just make it crossbow dudes. Feng Shui 2, where the monsters are all werewolves and vampires and it's a terrible night to have a curse... That would be fantastic.
Yeah, and the Katamari Damacy narrative would be real easy to adapt when they derail the plot line. Mm. Super easy.
I think Katamari would work best in Fiasco.
All right.
Normally, it's perfectly fine. You're doing great. As you roll along, you're just getting stuff stuck to your ball. You get, you got some checkers. This is all going real well. And then it goes to shit. You fall off the table. Everything down here is too big for your ball. What are you going to do?
I'm going to cry.
I'm going to cry. I'm going to try and find smaller stuff. I can't roll up these rats. I got to go downstairs and roll up more dominoes and matchbooks.
Let's see. What are each of your favorite Final Fantasy games? My personal guesses are Final Fantasy VI for Jeff, 5, 9, or 7 for John, in that order, based on the first of those he's actually played. Let me say this. I hate Final Fantasy IX. So much.
The Final Fantasy IX is a flawed masterpiece. That's what it is. It's a terrible game for a couple of key reasons. Number one, the random encounters are they're cranked up for no goddamn reason.
Yeah.
You can't walk off the path without being attacked by ridiculous dragons.
Mm-hmm.
So you just gotta grind that shit for too long. It's got real issues.
Final Fantasy IX was probably the only Final Fantasy where I didn't give a damn about anything as well.
Also, the characters are stupid looking.
Yeah, I hated everyone. I didn't want anyone to succeed. I was like, I hate this so much.
Yeah. 6 is spot on for me, but then again, I'm guessing that's because several times on the show I have talked about how much I love 6.
Probably.
It is the best of the Final Fantasy games as far as I am concerned.
And for me, the best Final Fantasy is 10-2.
Final Fantasy, pretty princess dress-up.
Suck it, nerds. Final Fantasy X-2 is amazing, and I love it.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say that Final Fantasy X-2 is better than Final Fantasy X.
There you go.
I don't give a shit about Final Fantasy X. Every time they're all like, oh, my dad is a ghost. Let us have a 20-minute conversation, and then a shark will attack. But the shark is a mountain of shark parts. And you're just like, oh, what the fuck? How long are you guys going to talk? It's like watching sad robots. Like, any second now, they're going to realize, wait, I am not human. Do I have a soul? It's so wordy. Final Fantasy X-2 strips that shit. Also, gets Yuna into some short shorts.
Everyone's having fun. Everyone's playing dress up. It's great.
It's awesome. Way better game than 10.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah. I'm on board with that. So 10-2, it's a fine answer as far as I'm concerned. But 6 is the best.
And also 11 is the worst.
Oh, the MMO? The first of the MMOs?
Yeah.
Because 14 is out there now. I know nothing about it.
14 slightly better. 11 is garbage.
Okay.
Actually, sure. No. That's not true. 12 is garbage.
Oh, yeah. 12 is hot garbage. Hot, salty garbage.
It is just so bad, and I hate everything about it.
It has the exact same problem as 10. Man, those people are going to fucking talk about Ivalice a lot. or Ivalice or whatever the fuck it is. And they're like, hey, look at this guy. His name's Balthier. He's like the Han Solo of this game, except his Wookiee is a rad bunny lady. What's he doing? Oh, I have a lot of opinions about regional politics. Let me expound upon those at length and leisure. Eventually, he's like, shut the fuck up, Balthier. Oh, the worst thing about this is I don't even get to control you. The computer does, and I get to give it suggestions.
Yep, which is why I hated that so much.
Yeah.
Okay, and then finally, favorite tongue twisters. Yes, this is a thinly veiled attempt to make you stumble over your words.
My favorite is that the sixth sick sheik's sixth sheep's sick.
Great.
Yeah, what about you?
I don't really have a favorite tongue twister.
Can you say mine?
No.
I'm actually really good at tongue twisters, which is weird because I stumble over normal words all the time.
Yeah. Just saying word and you're like...
But on the other hand, Unique New York.
Red leather, yellow leather.
Red leather, yellow leather. Yeah, I don't... I for whatever reason...
Toy boat.
My diction is perfect when it comes to tongue twisters.
Man, my diction is perfect.
Man, yo diction. Got a fake ID. My diction... Is 103? I can't do rhymes
today.
The
VIP?
There it is.
Come on, man. My science is just too tight.
You're way better at remembering Mickey Avalon songs than me. And I know you want to do the Jane Fonda.
All right. Here you go.
All right. Let's see here.
Did I say? Oh, that was from Binarian.
Binarian.
Binarian, the barbarian.
All right. A question from Beer for All.
All right.
Beer for All says, after hearing your In Theaters Now of Suicide Squad, where you guys flexed your knowledge of DC, I wanted to know, what D-list villain would you make a movie about? Either as the main villain for their own corresponding hero, or on their own weird standalone movie. I'm talking Captain Cold, Vigilante, Clarion, Toy Man, etc. Also, as a poisonous Australian criminal myself, I do enjoy your hilarious Aussie accents. Beer for All. Poisonous criminals. One and all.
Goddamn poison criminals.
Everything there is poisonous, so obviously the criminals must be.
Obviously.
I mean, you can tell because they're all eating that Vegemite and Marmite and what have you. That's just more poison.
That is straight up poison.
Autolyzed yeast extract. My ass, you got it out of a scorpion. Or one of those huntsman spiders.
I named this scorpion yeast. I'm going to extract from him.
I'm going to use my autolyzer.
So,
caught me a mess of meal spiders. They were hiding behind me clocks.
Fucking clock spider. All right, D-list villain that I would like to see show up for stuff.
I would point out that at this point, Captain Cold is not a D-list villain anymore.
No.
Ever since he headlined a show.
Yeah, no, Captain Cold is fairly high up there.
Who were the other ones in his list? Was it Vigilante was in the list?
Yeah, Vigilante, Clarion, and Toy Man.
Vigilante's not a villain. He's a cowboy.
Yeah, he's a rhinestone cowboy.
He's a rhinestone motorcycle cowboy. Maybe he's a different character I'm thinking of.
Maybe. I think so.
I don't know. Let's see. Fool Killer, maybe? No, I hate Fool Killer. Never mind.
Fool
Killer. All right, so D-list villains. Let's think it out.
D-list villains.
Let's work this out, Thinkenstein. speaking of Thinkensteins, I'm going to go with Solomon Grundy.
Maybe.
Standalone Solomon Grundy movie.
See, I was about to say, I could see that in a hero movie, but I would not want a standalone Solomon Grundy movie.
Coming to terms with the fact that he's a different person now.
Except he would just be walking around going, Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday, and that would be it. It would be like having a Groot standalone movie.
Which you want.
I do not want that. I do not want a Groot standalone.
Fair enough. You need Rocket there for that to work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you had someone hanging out with Solomon Grundy...
What if it was a Powerpuff Girl? That way Solomon Grundy could want pants too.
Yeah.
That'd be... Okay, never mind. Not Solomon Grundy. Let's keep thinking. Let's keep moving here. What else we got?
All right. Low-grade crap villains. I kind of want to go with... I mean, I would go with Music Meister because that's great.
Yeah, that is. Let's see. How about as someone for Superman to fight where he could actually cut loose and punch him, and he hasn't been in a movie, and he's not Darkseid, Lex Luthor, or Zod. How about the Helgramite? The Helgramite is a giant cockroach monster that hates Superman.
Yeah, but that's been on Supergirl already.
Yeah, and I'm fairly certain it was on Smallville, too.
Yeah, all the time. Everything's on these dumb shows.
Well, Smallville literally 10, 11 seasons or whatever the hell ran out. And unfortunately, like 3/4 of the Superman villains you've heard of that are on Smallville are like, I'm a high school student. I'm super strong and I have vague powers. I'm the Helgramite. At least I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
Kinda.
It was just every episode for the first 2 seasons was, I am a high school student and, oh no, now I'm a Superman villain.
In the Superman one where he gets too powerful and he's going to die pretty soon, what is it? Is it All-Star Superman?
Yeah, that's the All-Star.
There's a scene in it where he runs into 2 random, like, Greek gods or something.
Yeah.
And they go and they fight, like, reptile men in the core of the Earth.
Yeah.
And they're all just doing it to impress Lois.
Yeah.
I would see that movie. I think it's, like, I forget which god that is. It's Heracles or something like that. and then just some random strong dude that's a buddy of his,
mm-hmm.
I would watch that in a heartbeat. Just three dudes just walking around talking like Aquaman from Brave and the Bold, just throwing reptiles around and yelling outrageous and winking at Lois every couple of minutes. And while Superman just gets increasingly uncomfortable with the whole thing, it's like, I'm getting cucked over here. Fucking happy gods.
Stupid happy gods.
Speaking of which, the new gods. Oh,
the old gods.
Big Barda. Big Barda, Miracle Man versus Granny Goodness.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Who wouldn't watch that? That'd be an amazing movie. Fucking Miracle Man with his... especially if we have that scene in it where he sees his dumb outfit in the mirror and switches it for like a jacket. You know, just a jacket and pants. He's like, I look like an idiot. I look like an idiot in this stupid red, green, and yellow face paint, face job that I've got going on. Around in my two Roombas.
Thank you, Luke Cage.
Oh, you've seen that episode too?
Yeah.
God damn it, that was not great for me. The scene where he sees himself in his old Power Man outfit and goes, I look like a damn fool. And I'm like, man, no, don't insult your roots. Your roots are that you put on a dumb open yellow shirt and a tiara and you ask Dr. Doom for your money. Own them. Own your roots.
Do it. You know, if he wasn't already showing up in the new Spider-Man film, I would say the Shocker.
Oh yeah, you know, Shocker's due. I'm glad.
And he's coming. He's going to be in there, and I'm excited for that.
Well, one of my dreams, and it's probably never going to happen. There's probably not going to be another Iron Man movie. But my dream for an Iron Man film is that Justin Hammer and Obadiah Stane, who survived the explosion at the end of the first movie somehow, team up and they do the Armor Wars. Where they just start selling any armor to any dumb shit villain who shows up around Tony. So Tony has to fight all those dumbass armor suits that would never carry a movie on their own, but a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, so you get Unicorn and shit like that.
Yeah, Unicorn, the Wizard, Titanium Man, just whoever. All of them are just showing up. And I want a scene in the movie where he offhandedly, mid-conversation, sees a villain walking towards him, flips his hand around behind him, and blows one of Stiltman's legs off. It just leaves him standing up there on one stilt. That's what I want.
There you go.
Doesn't that sound like a great movie?
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to watch Jeff Bridges and Sam Rockwell playing off each other in the Marvel Universe?
No one.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. I got a lot of answers for you.
So many answers.
So many answers.
All right. How much time we got left? We good?
Yeah, we're good.
All right. So, time to bring up a few old classics of controversy from the RPG Hall of Fame. Number one, alignments. We all know that the classic D&D alignment grid, or whatever you want to call that thing, is utter shite, and should be ignored, modified, or derided as such. What systems have you come across that do a better job at A, having a decent alignment style system, and B, replace it with something much better, not including those RPGs that very sensibly just ignore alignment altogether?
I hate that parenthetical he's got in there, because honestly, I don't think I've ever played a game where alignment was relevant.
The only thing that comes remotely close is...
The intimacy system from Exalted, maybe?
I was going to say the old White Wolf most of the time had... I mean, you've got your nature and you've got...
Nurture.
Your motivation and, like, all of the splats generally have another stat that's like, this is your humanity or your whatever, and it's your sort of... stat that ties you to not being a huge asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all right.
Oh yeah, so you've got your disquiet or your great curse, because every White Wolf game is the same shit.
Yeah, everyone has one of these stats that is a 1 to 10.
Yeah,
that is your how close are you to being a monster.
And then you get to Exalted and there's like 15 kinds of Exalted and every one of them also has that.
Yeah, so with that, I'd say it. Because your alignment was sort of based on character decisions for personality and then a little, you know, 10-track box that you could fill in or erase, I was like, all right, that's okay. I'd rather just do away with it, but, you know, if you're going to have to put it in there, sure, fine.
I want to go with the Law Chaos Axis from the amazing game Stormbringer.
So amazing.
Because there's something about being able to have 666 points of chaos because you're a rad magic sword. And knowing that that is different in an alignment from someone who has 665 points of chaos.
Yeah.
In summation, this was a brief digression, so I could say, fuck Stormbringer.
And everyone who likes it.
There we are. I think most alignment systems just aren't my cup of tea. I like reading them because it's kind of an interesting view into the way that the world was written. You know, like the Palladium alignments with its aberrant and its diabolic and its scrupulous.
And its weird ways in which certain things are picked out to be, this is what a like principled person would do and this is what an unprincipled person would do.
But it's more fun as a read into the mind of Kevin Symbieta than it is as a useful alignment system.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. I think the modern intimacy and tie system from Exalted 3rd Edition is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Especially because it's so important to social combat that it actually does come up in play, as opposed to most alignment systems, which only come up in play when you cast Detect Alignment and use it to kill the assassin in the tavern.
All right. Codes of conduct. In some games, there are certain classes that traditionally had to follow certain codes of conduct or fall and lose their powers. The D&D Paladin, the Rift's Phase World Cosmonaut, for example. This has always been seen as encouraging adversarial play from DMs towards players of those characters, but is there a way to do this right? Can the general idea be repaired or altered so that it makes for a fun, challenging character to play instead of a hellish time where your DM double checks and interprets every single thing you do, looking for even the slightest excuse to make you fall?
Yes, and it's so easy that it hurts. The answer is let the player write it.
Eh.
Done. Hey, your character's some kind of holy warrior? What's his code of conduct? What does it look like? You tell me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, because there has to be a, he's saying do it right as in, like, if you don't do this, you fall. I almost never want that in any game because there's going to be a point where you'll get called on that.
It's just set. It's just an excuse to set up catch-22s.
Yeah,
and then be all proud of yourself, even though you control all the strings. It's not that impressive when you set it up.
Yeah, even if your DM isn't a huge asshole, there will be a point where you as a player is like, oh, well, my character would do this, or you go, oh, I do that, whatever it happens to be, and it goes against your code. So even if it's not a gotcha moment from the DM, there still would be a point where you're like, oh, oops, I went against my code. Well, guess I'm boned, and I should just get a different character because I lost all my power.
Yeah, it should be temporary resource loss. That simple. Like, oh, your character did something non-paladinly. Lose one daily power use. You'll have it back tomorrow. You'll be fine. But yeah, I think the best way to do it is to not leave the code of conduct in the hands of game writers, but let the players come up with it. Because not only does that broaden the class of classes you can play from a single set of rules, you know, if your paladin was write a holy code for what your mighty holy warrior does, then your paladin turns into a whole bunch of other character classes that use the same rule set, but have lots of different stories.
Mm.
So that's a nice way to do it. But the other thing that means is that you don't get stuck with stuff like, let's say, the Cyber Knight code of conduct.
Yeah.
Which mentions being good to women like 3 times.
Yeah.
Not in a useful feminist friendly sort of way where it's like, hey, don't talk down to women. It's more like, hey, constantly protect weak women. It's like, what? No, I don't need your dumb hang up, Symbieta. Man, I am fading on the voice. Let's do this question and be done.
All right. Recently, D&D and other games have started to make games where classes like paladins, druids, monks, and so on are no longer required to fall into specific alignments. While this is a great move and leads to players having more agency on their characters and able to create interesting character concepts, are there any character classes where you feel there should be some alignment or other similar restrictions, perhaps classes that people would not normally expect there to be alignment restrictions?
No. No, I really don't.
No, pretty much.
Yeah, because the problem with those is that even the fiction that comes out of these games always immediately subverts them, because that's the first thing you think to do. We're like, drow are always evil. Oh, I have a story about a good one.
Yeah. Whenever you're like, oh, well, you can't be a whatever, you're like, yeah, but it's more interesting if I'm the exception to that rule than, hi, I am exactly the same as every other person that is this.
I am the lawful good thief, because thieves can't be lawful or good. But I am the one exception to that, because I came up with a story where I only steal from the rich or something. And so it's people always immediately want to subvert those things when you give them to them. Just let them. Let them write the story, because they're going to do it anyway.
No, and honestly, the whole like, oh, well, you have to do this alignment, you have to do whatever, means you're just trying to control the stories. It's not like Paladin is so powerful and somehow being lawful good makes them less powerful. It just means you're only allowed to play one type of character. It's just limiting for the sake of being limiting without limiting for some actual purpose.
Right. And all it's going to do is lead to the one guy who's like, I have tortured my story of a Paladin into the point where he's a mean dick. Because that's subversion of the trope. Nerp.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not as fun as people think it is, and why bother having it?
So, bonus question, you have been tasked with creating an ICP and Juggalo-themed RPG.
Ooh.
What system do you use to create the game? What classes can you play as? What special powers are available for characters? What is the Juggalo equivalent of a Holy Avenger? What NPCs must they deal with and monsters must they vanquish? Personally, I can see a White Wolf-style Juggalo the Meth Binge working well, but I would enjoy hearing your ideas.
Thank you from...
Pocket Fox.
Pocket Fox. There it is. Let's see. Juggalo. Okay, so I'm going to start with the Holy Avenger. It's going to be the...
Fago. It's going to be Fago.
Oh, it'll be steeped in Fago. It's an empty Fago bottle, but it's a very specific one.
It's been broken over the head of someone.
It's the one that bounced off the off Tila Tequila's head when she tried to do that comedy stand-up routine a couple of years ago. And she went up there, and she's all broken inside now from drug use. And she like tried to do a comedy routine and then eventually tried to mollify the crowd by taking her shirt off, but it was too late. And they were throwing rocks and poop and bottles at her. One of them hit her on the head, and that one absorbed some of her mighty celebrity energy. And now they have the Holy Fago plus 5 bottle.
Yay.
So that's the weapon. The game, what's the game that we use for playing is Insane Clown Posse?
I mean, it's fairly easy to adapt. Anything with, like, classes or anything like that you could do. I mean, you could do the whole White Wolf style thing. It's super easy to do that.
I'm going
to
go with Numenon.
Lol.
And I'm going to say that the Silhouette Rouge, which is the metaphysical mansion that you wander through to discover your life, becomes, what is Juggalo? A gathering, becomes the eternal gathering where 5 Juggalos and down-ass ninjas must come together and wander through the ruins of their horrible life.
They must go through a pavilion tent in the Dark Carnival.
Yes, they must go through a pavilion tent into the Dark Carnival. They're greeted at the door by a giant elephant that is also Shaggy 2 Dope. and then he's like, wander my mighty halls. Will you become lost forever amongst the meth and floppy titties? Or will you discover what you have done wrong and exit this world reborn?
With motherfucking money! Yeah, there you go.
So it's Numenon. It's definitely Numenon. You play as 5 Juggalos and you have to... It's basically playing through the Hindu concept of reincarnation.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
As all Juggalos are familiar with.
I know, because they're currently at the bottom of the rungs. They have to live so many times through their lives as Juggalos before they're allowed to ascend to the next thing, which is
to
like
a cockroach.
To a cockroach or a small dog or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Looks like we got a few questions left. So to Tony 20 Toes, Fuzzy Gundam, and K-Smash, do not worry, your questions are going to be at the top of the list for next week's, or the week after next's Afterthought.
Yeah, next week's Afterthought.
Fuck you, we're doing one now.
Fuck you, I don't care.
Yeah.
Dewey and the Dirt Button.
Mohawk. It's all circus peanuts down there anyway. No, okay, before I steal anything else from Patton Oswalt, let's go ahead and... For you three, your questions are first on the list for next time. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we're the System Mastery Podcast. John, take us out of here. I am cracking up. I sound like Joan Rivers.
Yeah. Jeff is dying, so please send your questions for the next Afterthought to systemmastery@gmail.com, and also your condolences to Jeff's family for his untimely demise tonight. Go ahead and find, of course, all of our other podcasts. We'll be doing the Movie Mastery shortly, and this is October, so it is the month of Horrortoberfest, where I am reviewing a horror movie every single day of the month. And so far, I've done a couple, and they've both been terrible. And boy, howdy, I'm pretty sure that is going to keep on trucking for the whole month.
And of course, that means that the two movie podcast reviews that will come out during October will both be horror movies. And the two games that we're doing this month will both be horror games.
Yep, it's all horror all the time. I finally got my way.
That's what you always wanted. Oh, that reminds me, we will be putting up the movie poll for what horror movie in theaters we have to go see in October. I don't even know if there's enough to make that worthwhile. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Oh my God, my voice.
So if you have suggestions for what you want me to watch for the month, I can definitely use it. Right now, my list consists of like 31 different free movies on Netflix that I can watch.
What a coincidence. There are 31 days in October. If I have one more facelift, I'll have a huge dick on my chin. Oh! Joan Rivers jokes.
Joan Rivers. So yeah, go ahead, let me know what you want me to watch. The only rules, can't be something I've already seen before, and since you don't know what I've seen, let me tell you, most of the things that you know about. So,
that's true. Which year is this for you? Is this year 4 or year 5?
Let's see. Started this back in, I think this is year 4.
Okay. It's the third year that's been on the show.
Yeah, because I did it a year before we started the podcast.
Yeah, just posting these things to fucking Facebook or something.
Yeah, just Facebook updates that I was doing with these.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have seen an ass ton of horror movies.
Well, you've seen 93 of them because of this.
And then more just because I like them.
That's true. And I've seen maybe 6 because I don't really like this game that you do every October.
Yeah, someone has suggested that we watch, or that I watch, the Nightmare on Elm Street 2, and I want to do that with you. I want to watch Freddy's Big Gay Adventure Explosion.
Freddy's Big Gay Adventure. I don't even know. Is that, that's the boring one, right? That's
the big gay one.
It's really okay.
Yeah, right, that's, well, Freddy 2.
I'm in. Whatever.
There you go.
Sounds good. I was gonna recommend that you and I sit down and watch 1313 Cougar Cult together.
But I refuse to watch any more 1313 movies.
I watched it.
I have memorized the layout of that house by now.
I know. I watched it for about 15 seconds because it's on Amazon Prime. I was like, all right, let's see what, if you're in the house, 1313 Cougar Cult. Oh, yeah. It opens with a shirtless pool boy cleaning the pool.
The pool.
The famous pool.
Yep. So, nope. I'm good, 1313. I have seen your house.
Well said. I've seen your half a car that you made into a chair. I've seen shirtless young men.
I have seen the Hollywood sign.
I've seen the book light you're unreasonably proud of. I am good.
We are okay. So thank you so much for listening.
I'm putting that on the poll.
We will see you in a couple of weeks for another Afterthought. And until that point,
Patreon.
You keep Patreon supporting us.
Because we have new goals.
We have so many goals, and we're ad-free now, so hooray.
Yeah, we did it. Thank you so much. We were ad-free as of today on the website. We also have enough memory to last us a good long time, so that's great. We got a lot of storage space in there. And our new goal is, we're currently at like 444 out of our next goal, which is only 500. So very soon here, we will be doing the next one, which is that we will cave and review Fatal for you people.
Yep.
And then after that, there's another goal that I don't think we'll ever get to, where we'll review Fatal for you. No, sorry, where we'll play Fatal. I trust we will never make it to it, because I don't want to do that.
Yeah. And yep. If we do, I'm going to hate you a lot.
Whatever.
I already do. Nothing changes.
You're going to hate me all the way to the bank, sucka.
Yeah. As we're driving to the bank, and be like, I hate you so much.
Your bank's across the street from me. It's going to be real easy.
I know, right?
Thanks, everybody, for listening. You've been a great audience, I assume. I don't know. Maybe you've been a terrible audience.
Yeah, maybe you've been booing us the whole time. Or maybe you were just saying boo words.
Just trying to heckle us.
Throwing a tomato at your iPod or something.
Listening to it, just everyone sitting there at work listening to Afterthought. Freebird! Hey, show your tits!
Yeah, just grabbing coworkers as they walk by. Get a load of these clowns, huh? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I love that idea. Just heckling a podcast. And hey, speaking of, I just wanted to put out a special thank you to the crew of the Minoc for the intro today. You can find those guys and their wonderful show at oneshotpodcast.com. I believe that was specifically an excerpt from the awesome campaign podcast.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time. And until then, have a good one.